Though the Soviets had put Oswald in a place where they could keep an eye on him, he was living a much better life than the average Soviet citizen, and in fact, he was probably living better than he would have in the U.S. Oswald may have had plenty of money, but in Minsk, there was no place to spend it. Even though he had just met 19-year-old Marina Prusakova, he was bored and contacted the U.S. Embassy about returning to the U.S. After he and Marina got married in April 1961, Lee amended his request to return to the U.S. with his bride. Later, it was amended again when the couple had a child. In 1961, the Soviet Union rarely made it easy for its citizens to emigrate to other countries, much less the United States. But the Oswalds appear to have had little difficulty in persuading both the U.S. and Soviet governments to allow it. The State Department even paid for it, loaning Oswald $435 for the trip. In June 1962, Lee Oswald was back in the USA. The speed and ease of Oswald's journey from the Marine Corps to the Soviet Union and back was remarkable, and it raises questions. Did he have help, or was he simply that resourceful? And what was Oswald doing in the Soviet Union for 2.5 years? Was he a frustrated, disgruntled young man who thought his life would be better in Russia? Or did he go to the USSR on behalf of an intelligence agency? And if so, what was his mission? Those who think Oswald killed Kennedy and acted alone believe the former, seeing it as part of the pattern that ultimately drove him to the 6th floor of the Texas School Book Depository. Those who think Oswald was set up as the patsy in the assassination believe the latter. They too see his role as part of a larger pattern that would allow his manipulation to appear to be the presidential assassin. Is there a middle view? Could Oswald have gone to the Soviet Union on his own, but come under CIA influence on his return? George de Morenschildt may have known the answer to that. De Morenschildt was a Russian emigrant and a successful oil geologist who had powerful social connections. He was acquainted with both George H.W. Bush, in 1963 a young Texas oil man, and with Jacqueline Kennedy's mother. He was affluent and polished, the polar opposite of Lee Harvey Oswald. Yet upon the Oswald's return to the Dallas area, de Morenschildt reached out to the young man and became a friend and sponsor, introducing him to people and helping him to get resettled. Over the years, de Morenschildt told different versions of how all of this came about. But the story he told to author Edward J. Epstein in an interview just hours before he died in 1977 in what was ruled a suicide is interesting to say the least. In his diary entry for March 29, 1977, Epstein said he asked de Morenschildt point blank why he, a socialite, sought out and befriended Oswald. He said that although he had never been a paid employee of the CIA, he had on occasion done favors for CIA-connected officials, Epstein writes. In late 1961, de Morenschildt could not pinpoint the date, he said he had a lunchtime meeting in downtown Dallas with one of these connections, J. Walter Moore. Moore, it turned out, was the CIA's domestic contact in Dallas. He steered the conversation to the Russian city of Minsk, where de Morenschildt had spent his childhood. He told de Morenschildt about an ex-American Marine who had worked in an electronics factory in Minsk for the past year, Lee Harvey Oswald, who was returning to the Dallas area, Epstein recorded in his diary. Although no specific requests were made by Moore, de Morenschildt gathered that Moore would be appreciative to learn more about Oswald's activities in Minsk. At this time, he was extremely busy trying to arrange for Papadoc Duvalier, the Haitian dictator, to approve his oil exploration deal in that country. Some help from the U.S. Embassy in Haiti would be greatly appreciated by him, he suggested to Moore. Although he recognized there was no quid pro quo, he hoped that he might receive the same sort of tacit assistance that he had previously received in Yugoslavia. I would never have contacted Oswald in a million years if Moore had not sanctioned it, he explained to me. Too much was at stake. So De Morenschildt paid a visit to the Oswalds and gently debriefed Lee about his time in the Soviet Union, turning over the information to Moore. He said he also helped Oswald get a job by introducing him to potential employers. We don't know what else De Morenschildt might have revealed about Oswald and the CIA. After his March 29, 1977 interview session with Epstein, De Morenschildt returned to the Florida home where he was staying. There, he found a business card of a staff investigator for the House Select Committee on Assassinations. It is assumed the investigator was looking for De Morenschildt to arrange for an appearance before the committee. When the owner of the home returned, she found De Morenschildt dead of a shotgun blast to the head. She had left an audio tape recorder running to record her favorite soap opera. It also recorded the sound of the shotgun blast, but no other voices, though some conspiracy theorists say the recording contains the sound of the home security alarm. In any event, De Morenschildt's death was ruled a suicide. It doesn't seem very likely that the CIA would have asked De Morenschildt to debrief Oswald if Oswald were working for them. They would have had direct access. However, if what De Morenschildt told Epstein is true, then the agency knew who Oswald was and showed some interest in him before his return to the U.S. Is it therefore possible that some of the people De Morenschildt introduced Oswald to were directly involved with the agency? It seems to be a reasonable assumption. Antonio Vesiana was a Cuban exile who was a member of the militant Alpha 66 anti-Castro group. In 1976, Vesiana told the House Select Committee on Assassinations that his CIA case officer was a man he knew by the name of Maurice Bishop. In August 1963, he said he arrived for a meeting in Dallas with Bishop just as the CIA contact was ending a meeting with a young, unidentified man. After the assassination, Vesiana said he instantly recognized the young man as Lee Harvey Oswald. Some see this as a smoking gun that solidifies Oswald's tie to the CIA. But there's a problem. In August 1963, Oswald was living in New Orleans.